Welcome to Swiss Impact with Banerjit. I'm Svetlana.
And I'm Ben.
In season 2, we will be traveling around the globe, out of Switzerland, and bring amazing leaders from businesses, thought leaders, political leaders, of course, investors and experts.
We're working at implementing and realizing all the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals, better known as SDGs.
And they are also making profit.
Hello, I am Amina Gurifakim, and I'm the sixth president of the Republic of Mauritius.
My name is Parvati, and I'm a musical artist and the founder and CEO of Parvati Foundation.
I'm Michael Lichtenstein. I'm an entrepreneur here in Lichtenstein. I'm running on one side a financial services company.
You know, hundreds of deals a month, mm-hmm. We are seeing more things happening in this impact world. And this is because, look, the world is changing.
So join us to discover impact investing ecosystem.
See you every Friday afternoon at 3 p.m. Central European time at Swiss Impact with Banerjit.
See you on Friday. Act with impact.
Good morning, afternoon, and evening to everyone. And good night to our viewers from Far East.
Welcome, welcome to Swiss Impact with Banerjit. And today is actually already our week 9 of season 2, where we talk to global leaders, policymakers, investors, inspiring projects which generate positive impact in our world. And moreover, of course, we want to inspire you, our dear audience, and not only inspire, but for you to take in action towards better future. So, welcome.
So before we start, I again want to repeat what I said the last few weeks, is that we started a project in the name of my sister, Joya. And this project is to support and help underprivileged and poor people in India who are suffering from COVID. And this, you can find all information on this project on the website of Camomile, that is camomile.ch. And many, many people have already supported, but we can use all the help and support you can give us. Thank you very much for that.
Yes, from my side, of course, also thank you for all who supported and continue supporting, because COVID is still ongoing and the help is definitely needed. Before we go to our guest, I'd like just quickly mention our course, Profitable Business with Impact, which is coming soon again. So keep watching camomile.ch, and we might also create or soon make some advanced courses on fundraising, on business development. So it will be published soon. Unity of impact investing there, and I hope to see you on one of our courses.
Exactly.
Ben, do you have any story of today?
Honestly speaking, I'm getting a bit disturbed.
What's happening?
So you know that everybody knows I'm a very, very big fan of President Obama. Of course, there are many decisions and actions he took which I was not a supporter of, but in the modern Western world, I believe he was a true statesman lost left in the Western world.
But what is the confusion then? Everything seemed to be fine.
The confusion is President Biden, despite of being the president of one of the most dangerous times in the history of United States democracy, he's slowly becoming my favorite president. The actions he's taking, he may soon replace, in my view, President Obama in my eyes.
Oh, really? What did he do now?
So this week, Tuesday, he suspended the drilling leases in the Arctic. The Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, he suspended drilling reset. And of course, if the Republicans, God forbid, win again the election, they may try to rescind it. But this decision blocks at this moment all oil and gas drillings in one of the largest tract of underdeveloped wilderness in the United States. And this piece of land has been going on for 4 decades. The Democrats and the Republicans have been fighting on this, on permitting the drilling. And of course, the Republican leaders of Alaska are fighting it tooth and nail. And they also call it the, what was it? Agrarious federal overreach. I'm curious how many of Trump supporters.
Never heard about that. So exactly. What kind of animal is that?
I don't know how many people in among Trump supporters will understand these three words. But anyway, so the fact remains that no other industry has caused as much damage to the environment as the petroleum industry. And yet, they still are the biggest receiver of subsidies.
Yeah, but as long as people are consuming and addicted to petrol and diesel usage, and actually most of our democratically elected political leaders, they lack courage to fight it. So we cannot blame the petroleum industry solely because we are also responsible for that.
That I completely agree. That's very true. We are just as much to blame as anybody else on this topic.
Yeah, and if you look at the election, which is happening in Switzerland next week, and being a Swiss citizen.
Yeah, you are a Swiss citizen.
I have to vote in a referendum. And it's about CO2 law and climate change, right? And there are discussions between should we put some more restrictions or like support climate change. So the ones who are actually flying less and producing less CO2 emissions will be paying less, but the ones who not will be paying more. But a funny thing is that SVP, it's a party in Switzerland, they claim that it is leftist idea to make only rich people drive cars, you know, and you see in Switzerland all this funny advertisement on that, and it's like, are you guys at all aware what's going on, you know? And the CO2 law is actually very positive.
It so is.
I will not say what I'm going to want. So, yes, this is how it's happening in Switzerland.
So this really proves my point about the link between environment and the politics, which is happening since the last few years. So, I don't know if many of you read the IEA, that's the International Energy Agency report, which mentioned that energy accounts for 2/3 of total greenhouse gas emission worldwide. So if we want to reduce emission and mitigate climate change, we must include the energy sector, which would mean that we have to take the mighty petroleum lobby, especially this is very strong in large democracies like the United States and Germany. And that's why President Biden has become my star, because he is taking on this mighty lobby.
Yeah, absolutely. And I agree with that. So yeah. Maybe it's time also to welcome our guest now.
Exactly. So now we fly from Alaska to the other end of the world, Japan.
So Dr. Upadhyay,
welcome.
Please join us now.
Namaste.
Welcome to Swiss Impact with Banerjee. Wow, you have amazing background. I love that. Awesome. Where are you right now?
I'm in New Delhi,
mm-hmm.
And okay. I'm in my office.
That's amazing. Welcome. Office. Very, very inspiring. But let me please first introduce you to our audience, because some of them might not know your great achievements. So Dr. Upadhyay is a development leader known for his statesmanship, macro vision, and pragmatism, a prolific out-of-the-box thinker. He strongly believes that the current development model needs a fundamental change and has dedicated his life towards manifesting this thought process into visible and tangible results through the alternative development model, which we are going, of course, to talk about today as well. And your leadership is successfully catalyzed the India-Japan Global Partnership Initiative, which was announced in the year 2000 by leaders of India and Japan. I find it personally really amazing. And with your support and strategic engagement, you could really create strong partnership between these two nations. And this has led to mega initiatives like, for example, the Delhi-Mumbai Industrial Corridor, some people might know about that, and which formed to reestablish the industrial culture of India. So therefore, you are widely regarded as the architect of modern India-Japan relationship. So welcome to the show.
Welcome.
Thank you again. Thank you.
To start with, dear Vibhav, can you please introduce yourself shortly, especially how and why you ended up in Japan? Japan is so far the other side of the world. And what does your organization, which you are representing today, do?
Thank you very much, Svetlana and Ben. Thank you very much for inviting me to this show. Japan was not accidental in my life. You know, when I was a kid, I learned about Japan as a country which did a nation building after got ruined in World War II. And with that national building, they kept the Asian values alive while accepting the only development model around the world, which was based, you know, which came from the Western world. And but Japan kept it, their values alive into this. And the nation building they did in 30 years, 40 years time, it became a kind of a, for me as a kid, quite a heroic story, a success of a nation. And I got very, intrigued and very interested into that what Japan has done to create a nation, which Japan, which values and also, considers India as its spiritual, idol. And, because you know that India and Japan both are connected through spirituality and Buddhism, in many values which are incorporated into the Hinduism and Shintoism as well, so this is how I started seeing as a kid in Japan, a country from where a nation building has to be learned from, So when I was 14, around 13 and 14, I started learning Japanese by myself. There was no school in my city where I lived, and there was no internet. So it has to be based on books and radio and students and some foreign students from Japan with whom I could interact and know. And so I started learning, and it was not about learning Japanese only. It was about learning Japan, its culture and his history, and why, how, what are the strengths. There were so many perspectives about Japan, There was a Western perspective, there was an Indian perspective, there was a Chinese perspective, there was so many perspectives. It was a jungle of perspective of Japan, but I found Japan as a very, very interesting country, which has gone through difficulties, a resilient nation, which has created, recreated itself, reinvented itself as a, if we have to give an example of a country which has reinvented itself, Japan is one, There are many others, but, I will say, and there were a lot of things to learn. So for my higher studies, before I could go for my higher studies, I visited Japan several times, from my high school to my postgraduate. And from after finishing my postgraduate in India, I went to Japan, started studying. But everything what I was studying was related to computers. But, my school was in Japanese. So thanks God that I knew language. I could manage that. And but my mission was very clear. I wanted to know Japan. I wanted to learn about the nation building process. And that curiosity and that ambition in mind, and a dream in mind, basically brought me closer to people who are involved into the nation building there, including their political leaders, business leaders, thought leaders, and many other important thinkers in Japan, so this is how my journey started in Japan. In 96, when I finished my my post-graduation program in Japan. My school, the moment I finished my school, I started the India Center Foundation. That was a journey. And the idea was to take the voice of India to Japan and make the Japanese society understand that India has not only potential, but it has changed from the India they knew from the post-World War India, you know. And this is how I arrived there. And then I created India Center Foundation. The mission was very simple. Mission was that India and Japan should join hands together and form some out-of-box thinking-based global partnership. And this is the initial thought process, you know, which basically shaped up over the period of time in various things. You know, the global partnership thought process emerged from there, the development model thought process emerged from there, and then the initiatives happened, and then frameworks were made. So the foundation's mission was simple, that how do we forge a partnership with Japan as a nation? How Japan and India can bring their balance sheets, national balance sheets, synchronized with each other, you know. Mm-hmm. And then there are several layers to the partnerships which we wanted to address. The one layer was of thinkers, thought leaders, you know. Then the policy leaders, and then the civil society leaders, you know, and then leaders who were basically from the academic world, and they were leaders from business side of it, you know. So the so many layers into the partnership thought process that we had to address one by one.
Mm-hmm.
So
okay. I see, you are mission driven. So you are definitely from our world, impact world. And I want to ask you actually the next question. It's about United Nations SDGs, right? And I know that you discussed with Ben this topic a little bit, that basically UN SDGs are only limited till 2030, right? And it's not enough. And I agree with you, you know, but we need more, right? But what more? Can you please specify how do you see that? What else do we need?
Yeah. First of all, I will. I really appreciate and laud the effort UN has done, because in post World War, the priority of the world was to recreation of the world. You know, countries were busy in creating economy, socioeconomic fabric. What governing system is it? Socialism, it's a capitalism, democracy, you know, this ism, that ism, you know, the whole world was busy. And then, you know, there was no talk about what are the, you know, even the environment was not even in consideration in the policies. It is only in 70s when economic world started talking about the way we are going, the way we are designing, because, you know, people who are from visionary background or those visionaries can see what others cannot see, and generally speaking. So what United Nations did was amazingly good to bring the awareness about that they have to be SDGs, and then there has to be goals, and which have to be achieved by 2030. But as you know, my foundation and my work and my mission talks about the alternative development model. Okay, it talks about the new architecture through which human aspirations should adopt it. You know, okay, and take the development forward based on the new development model, which is alternative development model. And it is not one person's work, you know. It's in a new architecture. That means a lot of, like Windows and Apples, when the architecture came, the operating system was created, and the applications were made by lakhs and millions of people across the world, because they knew how to. So similarly, so you ask me, what is the difference? You know, SDGs are still based on the old development model, which is... Mm-hmm. which exists for last 300, 400 years, which was born to create wealth for societies, communities, nations, countries, regions, you know, and that continued to, and we still are using, you know, we all have been privileged to use that model to create wealth and systems products and so many things, you know. So the basis of all that was the old model, and I call it old model. Many of us may say mm-hmm. that, still that's the only model we have, which is not true. There are many experiments happen in the world with the development model, and some of them, but the one which prevail and the main is today is what United Nations is referring to. And then what United Nations has proposed is in basically a last mile repair of the entire ecosystem, you know. So it is like ideology is on the top, systems next, and then comes the initiative, project, and products, you know. The SDGs are basically applied on mainly applied on initiatives, project, and products. Some of them been also applied on systems, but applying, you know, there is a limit how much you can change into the current architecture of Windows or Apple. You know, these are two operating systems. I'm just giving you an example. Maybe Linux, you can say. You know, there is, you know, to change the architecture of operating system, you have to have a new approach, and then you have to have a new architecture. You have to recompile it, and then maybe the goal is the same: the human development. You know, human so
basically
growth.
Just maybe Vibhav, to our understanding that so you want to create a new base first and then on that build SDGs, right?
Yes. So ultimately we will also talk about SDGs in our own way, you know. Mm-hmm. And I will be very happy that if United Nations and us can work together, I'll be very happy, because first rule of ADM is never reinvent the wheel. You know, what exists in the world, you know, what exists in the world should be used to the best utilization of that into the ecosystem. But where in the ecosystem that fits in, it's very important to understand. And to finish my answer on this question, you know, I just described a pyramid where the top is ideology, second is system, and third is initiative, project, and product. So what I'm saying, if the movement SDGs are applied on ideology, that is changing the architecture.
Yeah.
You know, development mm-hmm. architecture. And what is the difference between the old architecture and the new architecture? The old architecture was based on exploitation-based development model, which is nothing
profit,
wrong.
Profit,
I mean,
that's profit. Not,
no, you know, profit is not exploitation. Profit can happen by empowerment also. What we have brought into the new architecture at the core is the empowerment. And I'm not saying there will be zero exploitation. There will be the exploitation component, but it will be driven by empowerment. It will be a majority of empowerment, you know, when the people are in the center, when the nature is in the center, and then when we create things, you know. So this architecture, you know, when people talk about making change, I always ask this question, you know. I have a friend who makes electric cars in America. I will not name, but you know, cars in America. So we had a dialogue. So there's a little dialogue, you know, and I said, you know, ideology, system, and product. So you belong to the product part of the ecosystem, and you don't own any system which supports your product, and you don't own any own or participate in the ideology. Maybe ideology, you appreciate the new ideology, you know, environment friendly, energy efficient, and sustainability is only a small portion of that new architecture. Okay, environment, climate change is not the only, it may be an ultimate goal, you know, it's a byproduct and outcome of what we are trying to do. Through various efforts people across the world are doing, but that's not the goal, you know. There has to be a process, and there has to be an architecture. So with this I finish my answer, that SDGs are the last mile or maximum touching the second mile, you know, little bit, you know, but we need to touch the first mile first. And the moment you touch the first mile of ideology and new architecture, the new systems will arrive, new products have to be created, new initiatives have to be taken, new projects will happen. You know, everything will change. And it is not a destruction. It's not a destruction of old system. It is a recalibration of old system into a new way of doing things. And it has to go in parallel, you know. It has to go in parallel. The old system will phase out in another 50 years. In 50 years, this new system will adopt. That's what we are working on. That's what we are talking about.
So you think in 50 years, we could completely adapt to SDGs, like from the ground, you know, not just from putting it on top of what we have?
If we adopt ADM, for sure. But exactly. If you don't adopt ADM, which is an architectural, which demands the architectural change, then SDGs will be just a good call for a mission for good cause. And in 2030, you will see that it did not achieve its goal, you know.
Yeah, exactly. That's the point. So, because I have been busy working at this topic. We have had this discussion also together with Oxford University and others. And there's a lot of now terms coming up like conscious capitalism, moral capitalism. There's a lot of discussions going on in the leadership level, in the academic level. And you mentioned a couple of times the ADM, the alternative development model. Can you tell our viewers a little bit about how it evolved, what it is, and what does it mean, and why is it necessary?
Like, how is it different, you know, maybe how it's different from conscious capitalism or moral capitalism?
You know, asking that difference is like asking what is the difference between, Apple operating system and Adobe.
We are just trying to understand it in more depth, you know, and for our audience who maybe heard it for the first time
we need to
dig a little bit deeper here.
Yes, I am going to answer that. So there's no comparison. You know, you can't compare it because these are two different functionalities. This is what I'm trying to say. And very much in the architecture of ADM, morality and consciousness are the very much integral part of it, you know. They are necessary. And they are essential part of it, you know. Without this, this is not going to happen. But there is much more than that, which is the, you know, the principle which needs to be understood and also applied before that. You know, there's a layer beyond that. You know, then comes the moral capital, because morality and capitalism is quite a conflict. I have experienced, our foundation has worked on it, and we have also seen, we have examples, we have seen initiatives where morality, consciousness, and capital can work together, you know. Okay, and still can give the similar or maybe better results, you know, better results. So whenever it is required, I will give examples also what we have experienced in our this journey of mission of ADM to experience how by bringing, because you know there are four or five formats of governance, you can say, involved, and the development model has seen a whole journey right from, I will not go deep into history, but let's start from mid 1800, 1900, and then 1900, you know, 20th century and 21st century. Okay. So, start with, imperialism was one format first. Which I will not go in detail with, you know. It was one format, and then governance was done there, and democracy existed in theory and some experiments right from the 1700s, but it started coming up as an alternative to imperialism soon after imperialism was in its last stage after World War II. In fact, what I believe. You know, there are many versions and perceptions about World War II. You know, World War II happened because of the format of imperialism was basically fighting with each other for their own existence. You know, and that's how the new format came. In the similar time, another format of socialism came, or you can say communism came, and capitalism arrived at the same time, you know, in a big way. Capitalism existed, but not into that much scientific definition of capitalism came and the way it could be described in only post-World War. And capitalism took a lot of shapes, you know. So one shape was, and as you see that capitalism came, then socialism came, they conflicted, then arrived the EU. They said, no, we need a hybrid. We need some capitalism, some cocktail of capitalism and socialism and moralism and consciousness and everything, and shake it up. And here it is, you know, and they did very well, you know, in one sense, you know. So then our Chinese friends came. They said, you know, the problem in capitalism is democracy. They said, democracy disrupts and destroys everything. Capitalism, the best partner of capitalism is communism, you know.
So this is a very good excourse into political structures, you know. I love that.
Yeah. So they adopted that, and they showed results also. But, you know, let's not debate it now whether those results were good or bad, you know. So they came up with this. So as you can see, the time around World War finished in around 45, you know, so in 50s, the democracy, the capitalism, and also in 50s, the socialism and various kind of, you know, influenced by communism theory and socialist theory came up. And then in 70s, started from Netherlands, but led by two leaders, France and Germany. There's the voice of connecting and bringing the Europe together, you know, because what European Union created was the capitalism 2.0, you know. And, you know, they improved some fallacies into the democratic values, and they included a few values in capitalism, what it should not do, what it should do. Then also the thought process in the 80s and 90s came about the climate change and global warming and other things. So what I'm trying to say is all these formats, and then, you know, and 70s, 80s, the European Union experiment happened. And then right from 80s, 90s, and you know, 2000 onwards, the Chinese experiment showed its, results and its outcomes. And what we started was in 90s, mid-90s, ADM, with Japan and India can come together, and they can say with Japan's Eastern values, India's Eastern values, and adopting some of the Western values, how with a new format based on empowerment, we can support the development of humanity in regions like India, Asia, Latin America, and especially Africa, you know? So this was the thought process. And that thought process is taking shape slowly and slowly. So as you can see, in all these formats, nobody fights on how to create value, because humanity is based upon create value, including capitalism or any other format, create value and share value. So nobody fights at the creating value. Mm-hmm. You know? Nobody fights.
I understand that, but like you had almost 30 years now, you know, from 1990, mm-hmm. from the, as you said, it was founded in 1990, alternative development model. So what has been achieved so far? What are the achievements? Because sustainable development goals, they have only had only 15 years. So it was created in 2015 till 2030, right? 15 years. So in 30 years, this ADM, what have you achieved already? What are the results?
Okay. Okay, can I just finish my last thing I was saying, the create value and share value. So everybody agrees on creating value, you know, whether it is in democratic setup or a non-democratic setup, everybody agrees. But there is a disagreement on share the value. Capitalism defines the sharing differently, and you know, people who don't believe in capitalism, they define everybody is eating food and everybody is using money. But this is our definition that how world is disagreeing to each other on sharing the value. Yeah. So the component of sharing is very much incorporated in ADM thought process also. Now coming to your point, what we have achieved since 25 years. Again, you know, can you consider for 1 minute that in the computer world, if we were in a computer world, we should be considered as Microsoft, who's trying to create an operating system. Operating system takes long time to develop, and it is a different cycle, you know. Okay. And people who make applications can be created in a 1 month, 2 months, 4 months. It's like a country's balance sheet and a company's balance sheet. You know, company's balance sheet only talks about 1 year, 2 year. They can see maximum 5 years. Okay. I'm not talking about all the companies in general. But countries can see their balance sheet for say minimum 5 years and maximum 50 years or 100 years. Some countries see 100 years also. So similarly for us, it was an operating system for developing it. So our cycle was a little longer. It took 25 years in achieving three things. One, we were able to give a shape to a vision, you know, a scientific structure to the vision. Second, we were able to bring a lot of leaders, whether they are from political world or from the business world or from, you know, social leaders, on one thought process, one page, you know, to understand what is the importance, you know, because this is not a product, you know, you can't go and sell it. Neither it's just an idea. It wasn't a vision which had idea, systems, ideology, products, and everything, and applying it on a country's. It was another challenge, you know. So what we have achieved, I will just give you a, you know,
I think in 30 seconds.
We achieved the awareness, understanding. We created the framework of the ADM and how countries or companies or states can adopt it. Now today we can proudly say we started involving states and we started involving countries only in 2000. February, and congratulations, Corona greeted us with all the resistance. Okay? So, and but still we could achieve two states, you know. Now one state in prefecture in Japan and one state in India has become our strategic partner in adopting ADM. You know, we are working with them, and what I see in India itself, there will be a lot of states which will love it because this is an operating system. It's up to you. You want to download and adopt it. Similarly, we see in Africa, on my trip in 2019 to Africa, I met many leaders there. Okay, they loved the idea. They said, because my presentation was, it is about no to exploitation, yes to empowerment. Let's work together. And how this can be achieved. And this is not about stopping someone. And so this is a new format in which you can, you know, empower yourself, you know. So this was our achievement.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's amazing. I mean, if you can already implement it in some states, that's great. Where can the ones who are interested to read more about that or download this operating system, some other country policymakers, where can they read about that?
Svetlana, very good question. For your personal consumption, we will send you the theories and things we are doing. But we will go public when we are going public. You know, my analogy may be funny, like I'm using operating system, Microsoft and Apple as another analogy I'm using. We are going to do the IPO of this entire architecture in form of a summit in 2023. It was supposed to be done in 21. You know, but It is not that we will not open up. We are going to be launching the ADM website pretty soon, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And this will be, it will start with bare minimum, and then will evolve in a great depository, you know, repository of knowledge and experiments and things we have done. Okay, and we will just let you know so you can just let your viewers
share it. Yeah. You know, on Chamomile and with our community. So I think it's very interesting for everyone to get engaged.
Yeah.
So I wanted to go to the next one. Is that like you mentioned yourself, 300 years back, the industrialization started, which made the Western world a political, military, and an economical power. It spread its way of life and thinking around the world, and it has worked very well, but for a limited few, not for everybody, but for a limited few. When I went to school in India, for example, everybody used to come with cycle. Now everybody's coming with a car or a scooter, and India is facing the environmental consequences for that, and whether it's air pollution, natural disasters, etc. So once hundreds of millions, and same is happening in China, when hundreds of millions of people want the same that people in the West want. Everybody wants a car. Everybody wants to eat meat and things like that. It is increasing the cost on the environment. So what future will the environment and nature have if the rest of Asia and Africa wants the same living style, same living standard as the West? So does ADM give a solution or a counter argument to this?
So when you will read about documents and papers on ADM, the first thing we are talking about this, you know, the 5% versus 95. You say the 5% population of the world, which irrespective of their location, you know, whether they were in West or they were in Japan or China or in India, 5% of people learn how to create wealth using the development model to create wealth for, say, a couple of centuries, 200-300 years, mm-hmm. And that it worked well for till the number of aspirants were limited and the resource was unlimited. Today, the world steps, the world is at the exactly opposite situation where the number of aspirants have gone infinite and the number of resources have become finite, you know. So when aspiration versus resources ratio has gone flip, it has just flipped, you know, it's just upside down. So in that case, my question to you, Bain and Svetlana, can we create a Paris-like city today with a similar cost and similar process anywhere in the world?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. If that is the case, that means you are saying you cannot use the old thought process of creating a system called urban settlement, which sometimes we call city, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So urban settlement, if the ground rule of making urban settlement has changed, that's one system. How about transportation? I can say 50 more systems which require, the answer will be the same, you know? That goes on telecom also in coming time, you know, okay? So it was very interesting. Somebody says, I will not use certain cryptocurrency because they use a lot of energy, you know.
Yeah.
It's a good, that's the one of the concerns, you know, right now, because human society thinks and takes as granted. I'm not talking about the thinkers and visionaries, but in general, people think energy, water, air is for granted. It's given. That's mm-hmm. why we are alive. And some people think even money is for granted, you know. Okay. So that's okay. But that's how the whole world lived for 400 years, 500 years, in a new thought process of creating wealth and development process, you know. So now what you have said, India, one-third of humanity, Africa, one-third of humanity, China, one-third of humanity, if these three start using the old model, old thought process, you know, same way of consumption of resources, same way of wasting the resources. Energy efficiency is not there. Environment responsibility is not there. I'm not saying the Western world or the people who created the old model are not conscious of environment and energy. They are very much today, you know. Some of them not, but, you know, mostly.
Still, many of them are not, being honest.
No.
Or they just ignoring it.
Big chunk of people in, you know, I will not say Western world or Eastern world, people still think, what are you talking about? Even some of the state heads, they deny, climate change is just a,
hoax.
It's a hoax, So, yeah. and they should not be blamed for it, They should not be blamed, because you have to understand. So when we talk about Africa and India, of course, that's what ADM is talking about and working towards. So these regions don't adopt the old model. And I'm not saying the people who belong to old model feel threatened, or they should think, oh my God, my system is... They have to understand two things. First of all, the new model cannot be made without the wisdom and the resources of the old model. It cannot be built. The people from old model are going to build the new model.
That's true. Okay?
So there's no insecurity into this, that it's not them versus us. The second thing we have to understand, the very fundamental on which the old model is running, the energy, the water, the air, is under threat, because more and more people are using their model to copy them,
Mm-hmm.
So it's their responsibility to help build the ADM, or ADM-like mechanisms to stop, large regions like India. And I will limit myself to India and Africa only, because China has already decided their operating system of development, They will realize later. In fact, I read one article, a Chinese leader said the model of their business development or business doing needs a rethink. So mm-hmm. These are very basic understanding. And then, so Svetlana, the example, you said what you have achieved, the example of what we achieved. I can give you one example that right now there are two economic initiatives going on. One is very quiet, because very few people know that India and Japan are working quietly to take this thought process forward with regions of Africa and the region of Asia. But China is quite vocal about it. The Belt and Road Initiative they created, okay? And that initiative is basically lagging 6 years from our declaration of creating the similar kind of Delhi-Mumbai Industrial Corridor was created, and then, thinking of creating the similar corridors in Africa and other places, it came. But this could be a case study that ours is based on empowerment-based ADM, okay?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And China has adopted not their new model. This is a model established all over the world, exploitation-based, normal operating system of development,
Yeah,
so exactly. So the world has to watch, and it is not a competition. This is like two operating systems. They will do their best, and what remains into the world, who adopts what based on the value, time will tell.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. And Vipap, so basically then it's can be applied to both, to advanced countries and developing countries. So ADM is not limited to advanced countries only. Is it correct? Because, countries like Nigeria are also very resource rich, and they can make the leapfrog evolution.
In fact, we should say ADM should be adopted in the regions where it's still uncertain of, like Africa is, the old model has been imposed on them. They have not chosen it,
Mm-hmm.
So they have a freedom to choose the model, what they want to adopt, Okay. So this is the time, actually, especially after post-corona, because corona has resetted the world's normal, The new normal is that this is a time when you can challenge. You know, this is a time when in a country like India, where 1.3 billion people live, I can stand and say, where is the healthcare system? There is none. These are only components which are very vaguely connected to each other. There's no ecosystem of healthcare in India. It's a broken version of what Britishers left in India. We just, you know, evolved it in whatever way. And now we are realizing most of the things we are doing in India is a patchwork. You know, in the general public thinks hospital is the healthcare system, you know. So to my question to them is always, do you think a police station is your national security?
Exactly. But then are you asking people to, for example, give up driving cars, flying planes? Because if you do that, don't you think there will be an immense pushback from the societies?
Okay. First of all, ADM is not saying don't do this, don't do that, you know. Okay. ADM just saying we should have alternative to, you know, like in India when we decided that we will have a huge network of bullet trains. Okay. What are bullet trains represent to? Bullet trains represent, you know, and it has not been put in the right perspective in India. People are thinking it's expensive, they're not required. No, these are the alternative to your flying systems. Okay. You are based upon an aeroplane-based system to go from one place to another place, you know. But if you can connect through the high-speed railway network, you know, look at Japan. Japan has both systems, you know. Alternative to flying is fast speed railways, you know. Okay. And there is a critical time in, you know, economic systems of the countries where time is a sense, you know. Time is really a sense. So if you see that how people from Tokyo can go to Osaka in the morning, do their work and come back to their home, have their dinner. Okay. So that changed a lot of things in Japan, you know, migration of people. And, you know, so this is how, you know, a fast network of trains in India was proposed in the time of Prime Minister Bajpayee when he was Prime Minister between 1999 to 2004. And the you know successive governments you know took this very seriously and they continued with this work, and now finally our honorable Prime Minister Modi made that happen, you know, at least the first step towards that.
Yeah, exactly. But the countries you are talking about running the pilot projects are countries like India, Japan, Norway, but these are all democratic countries. So does that mean that ADM is only limited to democratic government structures?
No, ADM is agnostic of what in a political governance system you have, you know. It's about your fundamental survival, you know. It's about your next generation won't survive if you don't adopt, you know, if there is a building which is 50 years old or 100 years old, an earthquake comes. So consider there's an earthquake in the world right now. Everything is shaken. Okay. There are cracks in the building. And what we are doing right now, what we are doing is we are filling the cracks, painting it well, changing the drapes, changing the furniture and saying, here this goes, you know. You know?
Yeah.
That's not how we can secure our future. We have to make the next building, which is earthquake resistant with a higher, you know, we have to use technologies. We have to use enablers to go forward. And also we have to see that we depend less and less on energy we take from the source, water we take from the source, how we can process it, and how independent we can become from the centralized systems of energy and environment, you know. And one more thing I would like to add to your previous question, which is connected to this, that we in ADM are not suggesting don't fly, don't buy cars, you know. Rather, we are saying that, you know, learn from what happened in Corona. You found a way without flying. You can still You can still do things.
You can still.
I'm not saying that.
You can still live your life without flying. It's also possible.
Yes. So the argument of people and leader, you know, I will not go. Who are those leaders and things? Because market forces and capitalism basically becomes driving force sometimes in even politics and social structures. So what happened? My question was to people, some of my friends who are state heads also, and they are, I sometimes ask them, tell me, friend, the country you are from have trillions of dollars budget every year. Where are our trillions? Why people are dying?
Vipab, the question is, because we are talking about impact investment. So which role you think impact investment can play for implementation and development of ADM? How these investors could get engaged into something like that?
So very good question, actually. Impact investment is basically an investment with wisdom and vision. Okay, and it sees the outcome. When they see the balance sheet, they don't see the money only. They see how much of energy is being saved, how much of environment is being saved, how much of sustainability they have attained, what good they have done to society, like happiness. Is it making people happy? And then they're also seeing, does this create some relationship in the community? Does this create respect? All this is going to be factored into the balance sheet when the real impact investment has been done. Some of them are using all the 14 we have described. There are 14 points which should be involved into a balance sheet. Even banks, we are appealing. They should give. They should think about dispersing their money if people are incorporating 14 things in their balance sheet. Just not the money. If you just, because money could be dangerous, it could be disastrous. If we keep on pouring money in the current system, we are just basically shorten our existence. So
but
we have to pour the money.
People are still doing it, even though they see that traditional investments are performing poorly in such crises like COVID, they still continue doing it, So something is, how can we really change this system?
50 years. It's like a nuclear reaction. The nuclear reaction. One fusion shall happen, okay? The corona is that fusion that which has happened in last year, okay? And from here, the chain reaction will happen. You just watch and see that how impact investment will become the core, and I will also like to talk about blockchain, okay? Yep. Just one AI and other technologies which can be enabler, they can be used in a wrong way also, but impact investment also should check with their investment what technologies they are using to empower their business. I'm sure many of them are checking this. So what I'm trying to say is that there was the old business and old economy will not stop. It will take 50 years from today, in my opinion, in my calculation.
I hope I will still see that.
We don't have 50 years.
Yeah, but it is not going to happen in one day, 50 years. It will achieve and attain in height in 50 years. It has already started. It has started. Like in India, we are adopting social systems, and we are adopting systems which are empowerment based. So think if a one third of humanity can do that, and if we can successfully do that in Africa as well, 1/6 of humanity plus 1/6 of humanity, 1/3 of humanity, attains that.
President Biden will want to implement something like this in US.
I think so. I think he would be. So
let me tell you, I expect the developed nations to be leaders in ADM. Okay, they may not implement. The stakes are very high in changing, because a ground where there is no building, making a building is more viable and more faster and more attracts less resistance. But a ground where people are living, you know, go to a, you know, like I take an example of like slums. If you go and tell them, leave your house, even if you're offering them the best of the house you can provide them, you find resistance, you know, it takes time, you know, and then you replace it, you know. So, you know, countries which are yet to adopt their development model or their, you know, focus in the development model are easy to adopt ADM. But countries like America, regions like Europe, Japan, India, you know, and why not China? You know, I think these are the regions, Africa, India, and Asia, where ADM-based systems can be adopted at a very fast level, you know. Yeah.
Because that was the question I was leading to, because you also mentioned that Corona is a kind of trigger to ADM. But the world is still reeling. I mean, even India, which is one of the fastest growing economy, has now suffered very badly. This has distracted also many governments and political leaders from issues that matters, like environmental issues, even in Europe, because Europe, they had put aside a lot of money for environmental issues. But since the damage caused by Corona, a lot of these funds and finance had been distracted to support or save countries which are economically very weak. Same is happening to the migration of Europe to carbon neutral economy. So do you think this Corona impacted and the implementation of ADM positively or negatively? Because looking at all how the fund is moving.
You know, I cannot say Corona is a good thing to happen. It was a very, very, I lost a lot of friends and a lot of people I really cared and loved ones. A lot of people have lost their lot of friends and all that. This is a very sad thing which has happened. But to humanity in total, in long term, we will realize that Corona basically came to teach us a lesson. You know, we realize, I'm not talking about the advanced countries, even advanced countries like America, people were dying every day in Italy, in Europe, places, people died, you know?
Yeah.
Where are those sciences? What happened? Some people said this is a biological warfare. It doesn't matter. Why you are not ready for biological warfare as well, you know? So the deployment of capital is in question right now, okay? And people are very quiet. They are not saying. They will wait for their chance to say things when they are choosing their leaders, you know. Okay? They will look at when they're choosing their leaders, what their leaders are telling them, what are the measures they are going to take to bring a massive change into the social infrastructure or infrastructure of the country, you know, including healthcare.
I hope you are correct, because America worries me.
Well, you know, whole world is nobody is safe. You know, this is like so I will call Corona triggered the essence of ADN. We have received many, many companies. A huge pile of communication is with us right now. You know, people are saying this is the time. Come forward. Let's do it. You know, and we also were planning, because this is our 25th year of our existence as an organization. Now we are four organizations which are doing it together in four regions of the world, in Oslo, in India, in Japan, and in Washington, D.C. But now, coming 25 years, this is what we are thinking that, and Corona, or you can say, is a milestone, you can say, if we don't want to say a pre-Corona world and the post-Corona world. We can just divide into two parts. And there's a serious things we need to talk about, you know. And the first thing leaders especially should think is that, are we working with the right operating system of development or not? Okay. Once they ask this question, they will be able to answer what an operating system from development must contain, what it should provide, what functionalities. and they will see the old operating system was very good when it was at its peak, you know, when there was no worry of, you know, aspirants versus resources tug of war, you know, or a struggle, you know. But today somebody has to starve. If somebody has to be at best performance, somebody has to starve because resources are limited.
Yeah, exactly.
I have this question on my mind since some time, because you mentioned that you will place IPO with ADM, right? So it is in private hands right now. Do I understand it correct? So it's a company privately held, or like how then others will be able to get this system? Is it from the government, from Indian government?
No, it's not government. It's not company. It's a mission right now. It was started. ADM is an outcome. Okay. On the day one, we started with the vision of bringing India and Japan together to work together to contribute to humanity. That was the mission. Okay. And it was a non-profit organization called India Center Foundation.
Yep.
And then that India Center in Japan now has been a new organization has been created called India Japan Foundation, which is taking the India Japan Global Partnership thought process forward. So it's a non-profit group of four or five foundations which are non-for-profit. It's not private. Mm-hmm. It is anybody is welcome as far as they can determine what they want to do. You know, there is a way of participating. There's a way of contributing. The way of suggestion and idea. And with the ADM website and other foundations website, when you will see that we work by engaging not only with governments or state governments or large corporations, but with people also, okay? So in coming time, when I said IPO is a symbolic word, it's not a company. Oh. You know,
okay, it's symbolic. No. Something is, we need to clarify that.
IPO, you know, I compared IPO to the summit, which is IPO. What is IPO? The company's IPO is on the stock exchange where people come to know about company prospects, and then they become stakeholders. We will invite stakeholders to this nonprofit mission for humanity at the summit. This is what I said, you know. And there will be people who will participate more, know more about it. You know, I'm sorry for creating this confusion, but that's what I meant.
Now it's clear, because I have financial background, so for me it's like IPO, like, okay, why? All right, that's clear. But let me ask you something else, because you're such an expert in Japan, and Ben is such a fan of Paris Agreement and climate change. So how is actually Japan doing in its alignment of Paris Agreement and its role in climate change? Because we hear a lot what's happening here. And so, but Japan is kind of silent. So what would you say? What are they doing? What is their...
As you know that Japan ratified on 9th November 2016 the Paris Agreement. You know, they ratified it, you know. Paris Agreement did happen in December 2015 and 9th, came in action on 4th of November. 8th of November, Japan ratified it. And on 8th of December 2016, Japan actually gave an action plan that what they can do towards the agreement they have signed and ratified for climate change. As you know, Japan has gone through a natural calamity, you can say, which resulted in a disaster of Fukushima.
Yeah. Mm.
So the dilemma of Japan for very long, since 2011, and before 2011, Japan was a model student for climate change. Now Europe is, okay? And Japan was also given this, very award by this climate change network or an organization gave, you know, because they said they will keep on using fossil for some more time, you know. Okay, coal. There are more than 140 plants in Japan which are still producing electricity from coal. Okay, so if I'm not wrong, I'm sorry if my data is wrong, but this is what I remember from my old data. And nuclear plants were replacing very fast the need of energy for Japan, which is quite a developed nation, and their energy needs are very high. So Fukushima basically forced them out of fear and out of, you know, decision in the society and the government that nuclear plants are not no more an option. So the only option they were left were the coal, plus they tried to do a lot of solar, but you know, solar is not a stable answer. It's a supplement to what is required in energy, but no, it's not an it cannot be the prime source of your energy thing. And then so Japan is determined to you know implement what they have ratified for towards the Paris Agreement. And in fact, the action shows in their because Japan is the only country which has gone forward in a big way. Other countries are also doing it, but big way in creating the hydrogen society, you know, because they have recognized that electricity is the only renewable energy which they have to continue using, whether it's electric vehicles or factories, robots, houses, whatever the electricity. So they have to produce electricity, whether it is from coal or something, and they want to phase out all the coal thing in I think in 20 years time, you know, by 20, yeah. So they want to shut down everything, and they're also experimenting a lot with the geothermal, which could be also an alternative. Yep. So in a hybrid of energy sources, because as you know, Japan didn't have any energy resource. They didn't have oil or coal, so it was all coming from outside. And then the nuclear were adopted. Now, with the more safety and more determined way, Japan has also brought a change in their rules of using now nuclear. Now nuclear energy has been restarted in Japan recently, in a few years back. Now, so you know, Japan will remain leader into this. A lot of ups and downs happened at the time of Fukushima. It took 5-6 years just to, you know, they had no option to. Instead of saying "I promise," they said "We will do our best effort to do this." You know, these words for international community must have created some concerns. You know, that whether Japan is serious about this or not. Japan, let me tell you, I have lived in Japan. I have understood the society a little bit, whatever I could. Whatever I could understood as Japanese are nature lovers by their prime thinking, like many other European countries and like Indians and many others. But how much they can implement in their daily life, their basic fundamental thinking about nature, Japanese have done a lot, you know, and they will continue doing. And in fact, I have learned a lot, despite India is a country which takes climate change and environment very seriously. It was in our culture for several thousand years, that how to be environment friendly and not to waste and other things. But India has adopted few of the good things and bad things from the Western model of the world also. So because India is a huge system, so the outcome looks like huge. You know, but if you compare the per capita garbage India creates or CO2 India generates, is still in a fraction.
It's very small.
Very
thank
small.
Thank you, Pap, for sharing that really valuable information. Thanks for sharing this update. And I have another question about youth and climate change. So, how is youth engaged in this climate change environment? Issues, is it like just here in the West is it any different?
So, you know, I think youth, all this ADM exercise, or anyone who's doing other exercises similar to this, and even United Nations doing SDG, for whom? People who are 70, 80, 90, they will not be able to see the results of this. People who are young, you know, they are our future. and it, next generation and next generation next to that. You know, the kids who are 10 years old, 5 years old today, my own kids are 12, 13 years old. 13 years old. No. So I believe, you know, youth is going to do a great role. So, you know, the managing trustee of my foundation in India is only 25 years old. I'm looking for young leaders across the world, you know. And, you know, our friend Aditya Bhagat, who's from Chhattisgarh, who's here online right now, I can see him. He's a chairman of the youth committee of our foundation as well, you know. You know, so youth has to take the responsibility. I'm actually looking for someone. Ben, if you can introduce me through your network and your audience, and who can come and...
We have a lot of young, inspiring entrepreneurs, you know, who are so engaged. So, absolutely.
Exactly. Yeah. So I wanted to go to the next one. That's since I was a kid, I always thought that Japan and India are kind of natural allies in Asia. But this, in my opinion, this relationship never really took a very concrete foothold. So what is the hurdle? Because I always thought that if you include the Indian innovation, production capacity and micro market size together with Japanese technology and science, they can conquer the world market with sustainable and high quality goods for the welfare of all. Why isn't this happening?
It's happening actually, but it's not visual. Okay. It's happening. So you have to understand, it's like in a film production. You can see what's been produced only when it comes to silver screen. Yep. But you don't see when the script has been written. You don't see when the, you know, the acting coaching is going on and, you know, actors have been recruited and all that. So that you don't see. So world does not see the pre-production exercise of what we have created. These two countries agreed. It's a slow process, you have to understand, slow process. And several layers, the political layer, thinkers layer, social layer, business layer. And finally, political layer understand is most. And thinking layers understand a little bit better than that. Then the business layer is trying to understand right now how to engage in the new framework. Okay, and things are happening. It's not that things are not happening. A lot of things are happening. Yeah. Things have changed. I have seen Japan and India relationship in 91. 89, 86, and today I see what is happening. It's a 180 degree change in the collaboration between two countries. But we are standing, if the potential is like sea, you know, mm-hmm. potential is like sea, and we are standing at the beach and throwing small stones and pebbles, you know, right now. That is the stage, you know, okay? But the stage will grow with the youth getting involved. And I believe the dependency on politics and dependency on government only is a wrong way of adopting India-Japan mm-hmm. global partnership. It has to go to the trickle down to people, everyday life. You know, it will take time. And once the chain reaction happens, the movies have done that role in Japan about India, you know, okay? They have come to know. Many, many people in 90s were surprised that, oh, some people ask, oh, India does have cars? You know? That kind of questions.
You know, bears are not walking on the street in Moscow, really not.
And I don't see any cow on the road and no snake charmer. That was the question. And I'm not talking about 60s, 70s. I'm talking about, you know, 1997 when we engaged with Indian movies to take them to Japanese society to tell them about India, what is today's India is, you know. And it was quite a surprise. We started from that level, you know. Okay.
So they like today, Bollywood movies in Japan?
Yes. That's a big success in Japan right now. Commercially, yeah, not that well, but, you know, people are very, very, and youngsters especially in Japan, the new thing has happened. The youngsters in Japan has made India as their destination, you know. The learning, you know, they want to work in India, you know.
Okay.
You know, they want to work in India, and they want to work with Indians, work in India, and you're right. a lot to achieve. So that's what the foundation is working toward, bringing new systems. Like, we have a lot of problems also. Like, we don't have enough, you know, there may be an infrastructure for India, social infrastructure or business infrastructure for Japan. But the joint regime, the India-Japan itself is a regime, you know. India-Japan, yeah. And it cannot be alone maintained and led by governments of both sides, you know. Governments are necessary. They are required to manage such big perception and the partnerships. But people have to come forward. You know, there has to be a chain reaction in societies where this partnership, for that, the awareness, the awareness about what is India-Japan. The one awareness I would like to add, the India-Japan Global Partnership has not been designed to capture the world and their market. You know, it's been designed to work together, put their strengths together, and serve for humanity in various ways, and the economy of both countries and for the global partners and other people is then a final outcome of, you know, there are many outcomes. You know, there will be a geopolitics which will be outcome, there will be economy which will be outcome, there will be, you know, new thought process which will come outcome, science and technology research and development will come as an outcome. But these two countries, like France and Germany in Europe, these two countries have a potential to bring Asia and Africa and EU also together, you know.
Exactly.
And we are very much amazed by India. I mean, Ben was born there, but I am amazed by India and also Japan, which is really unique how they combine the Western materialism with Eastern mysticism and spiritualism. But what disturbs us, it's still, for example, whale killing. And, you know, they call it so-called scientific experiment, which has driven many species of whales to the brink of extinction. So what is your opinion on that? And how can this be then combined with this spiritualism and mysticism? Why are they doing it? So what do you think? When they are going to change?
You know, from my opinion, there is a drastic change. As you know, that in 80s, you know, mid-80s and last of 80s, Japan was doing this, declared this as a scientific,
experiment,
you know, experiment on whales, and they were fishing, you know, freely for that. And then there was a, you know, United Nations, International Court of Justice basically declared it illegal in 2014, you know, and Japan basically, there was a severe reaction in Japanese society, because you have to understand from their perspective also, you know, the Japanese society, whale and many other fishes which were available in, you know, ample amount, you know, numbers before, but because of the continuous exploitation, it's like, you know, whale and fishes are like any other natural resource, and if you keep on exploiting, there will be a time where it may extinct, you know. So if you go by numbers, you know, Japan, which used to close to 600, 700 whales in 2016, 17, or maybe 2018, I think that was the maximum number of the whales they used. But it has come down to 300, and it will go down further, you know, because they have also realized that, so instead of a whale being a habit in Japan, it is going to become a delicacy soon in Japan, and they also very sensitive about this. But you know, if you go to Indians and say you can't eat curry, you know, you can't eat curry because
that's instant death. No, that's no curry.
If I tell you can't eat curry. You know, and if somebody convinces you that the greenhouse which comes out because of the making of curry is basically destroying the world, maybe in some times you do something. But your first reaction is, are you kidding me? You know, so that was a reaction of Japanese also. It was a delicacy there. There was a cultural aspect to that, And now they're understanding slowly and slowly, and you know, they're reducing it, and I'm sure they will reduce it to the level, and I have heard that they are also working on you know, a very high breeding of whales, so they can compensate for what they are actually right now whaling right now.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Oh. I hope so. We are running out of time, Vibhav. It was such a great discussion. But very last question, because it's really important. We are action-oriented here. So what would be your call to action to our viewers, and maybe something related to ADM? So,
And how can they participate in furthering your mission?
For participation, Ben and Svetlana, you have to... be our partners first, you know, because you have this platform of outreach to so many people across the world, you know. So the participation is a process in which, you know, there are many things they can participate into, but that's, we will do a digital dialogue at the later stage. But one thing I can say, the participation is welcome. Our organization has thousands of initiatives which needs to be implemented. We don't do most of that by ourselves. You know, we believe into what is available shall not be created. So if we have an expert who can do this, we always partner with them. So we invite such experts in the field of healthcare, agriculture, you know, and our organization is a very, very resource hungry organization, though non-profit, mm-hmm. but very resource hungry, because we do so many ideas, and then we invite people with ideas, people who are ready to participate, those who can give their time, those who want to work with us on, you are working on impact investment. We are also working on impact investment of a very, very, at the deep levels. So my call of action is, you know, everyone who's hearing this, please write to our friends Ben and Silvana, and we will try
please to. Please don't try to us. Oh my gosh, I have so many emails.
and to us, if they can just let you know our contact address. We have programs and we have initiatives, and people, especially with states and countries. And we believe in what we preach, we show by executing that. So people with execution-minded people and like-minded people, they're more than welcome. And especially the youth, which is the future of this, of our world. The responsibility is much more of ours to correct the situation, enhance, and we can work together.
Exactly. I was just thinking on that point, because you have the chamomile, because that's where everybody can put their products, because the investors and the financial institutions are also, and also experts, are on the platform. So what I can propose is that if your projects or initiatives can also register on the chamomile, then they can themselves directly find the financial resources, the expertise, and everything.
Sure. This is why I said we have to work together.
Yeah.
Yes, we have to work together.
Exactly. No, and we have to. I mean, there is no other option. There is no other choice.
Absolutely. I'm really looking forward to know more about ADM and to the IPO in 2023.
thank you very, very much,
Vibha. Thank you for coming.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Namaste.
Bye-bye. So, viewers, with this, the show ends today. It was so amazingly interesting. I learned so much. Next week, our guest, he's the majority shareholder and the head of one of the fossil fuel industries, one of the biggest in Nordics, in the North Europe. And he's my colleague at the Climate Leadership Coalition, and he's the founder and the principal shareholder of the company ST1. And to all the small and medium enterprises and entrepreneurs, please keep the eye on our course on chamomile, that is CAMOMILE.ch. Thanks for watching us.
Thanks for watching us. And as usual, act with impact. See you next Friday.
Bye-bye.
Welcome to Swiss Impact with Banerjee's. I'm Svetlana.
And I'm Ben.
In season 2, we will be traveling around the globe, out of Switzerland, and bring amazing leaders from businesses, thought leaders, political leaders, of course, investors and experts.
We're working at implementing and realizing all the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals, better known as SDGs.
And they are also making profit.
Hello, I am Amina Gurifakim, and I'm the sixth president of the Republic of Mauritius.
My name is Parvati, and I'm a musical artist and the founder and CEO of Parvati Foundation.
I'm Michael Lichtenstein. I'm an entrepreneur here in Lichtenstein. I'm running on one side financial services, a company.
You know, hundreds of deals a month, we are seeing more things happening in this impact world. And this is because, look, the world is changing.
So join us to discover impact investing access.
See you every Friday afternoon at 3 p.m. Central European time at Swiss Impact with Banerjee's.
See you on Friday.